Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we transform complex documents into clear, actionable insights. Today, we're dissecting a professional services agreement, a seemingly dry legal text that's actually the blueprint for how a city fundamentally reshapes its future. Our mission today, a deep dive into an agreement between the City of Shawnee, Oklahoma, and Freeze & Nichols, Inc., or FNI, for a unified development code project. We're going to, extract the key insights from the detailed legal document, showing you how broad urban visions get translated into concrete, often surprisingly intricate, operational plans. It's about understanding the very DNA of how a community grows.
And this truly matters because these agreements aren't just paperwork. They are the critical tools cities use to adapt, grow, and shape their future. Understanding them offers you a genuine shortcut to being well-informed about the often invisible machinery that makes urban development happen. It's how a city moves from a vision board to new neighborhoods and vital infrastructure.
So let's unpack this. What exactly is a Unified Development Code, or UDC? And from your experience, what's often the biggest challenge a city like Shawnee tries to solve by consolidating its regulations into one?
That's a great question, because at its core, the UDC's purpose is to streamline and consolidate several existing, often disparate regulations into a single document. For Shawnee, this means bringing together their zoning code from 2014, their sign regulations from 2002, and their subdivision regulations, which incredibly date all the way back to 1990, into one cohesive whole.
Wow, 1990. So yeah, consistency must be a huge driver.
Oh, absolutely. The biggest pain point cities address is often inconsistency and outdated rules. I mean, imagine trying to develop a new project when you have to cross-reference three or more different rule books, each written decades apart, potentially contradicting each other. It creates confusion, delays, and frustration for everyone involved. And if we connect this to Shawnee's bigger picture, the city adopted a new comprehensive plan called Shawnee Next Horizons back in October 2019. The existing land development regulations needed a significant overhaul to align with that plan and, achieve the community's shared vision for future growth and development. This UDC is the mechanism to make that alignment a reality, ensuring future development actually supports the city's long-term goals.
And it's not just the UDC itself. The agreement also includes work on an engineering design criteria manual, or EDC, that'll eventually be referenced within the UDC, right?
That's right.
City staff had already started a draft, apparently, and FNI will provide a third-party review, a technical memo with recommendations, and support for its completion. So how does including that, or referencing it in the UDC, allow Shawnee to build in flexibility for future changes? Because industry standards change so fast.
That's a crucial point. The EDC is essentially the nuts and bolts guide for infrastructure design, things like street widths, drainage, utility placement, that sort of thing. Referencing it within the UDC rather than embedding every single detail allows the city to maintain flexibility.
Okay.
They can update the EDC separately as new technologies emerge or as building materials and engineering standards evolve without having to amend the entire UDC every time.
Ah, that makes sense. It keeps the core development code stable while allowing for technical agility.
Exactly. And just to clarify the players here, the client is the City of Shawnee, and FNI is Freeze & Nichols, Inc., the consulting firm they've hired. And what's interesting right from the outset is the how much. FNI is compensated a lump sum fee of
$344,492. $344,492.
Yep. For the basic services outlined in the scope. It's important to note, though, that this is specifically for that defined scope.
Bro.
Any additional services or changes outside of this initial plan would be extra, billed separately. This immediately sets up the need for, really clear boundaries.
So how does a vision this grand actually get built? The agreement lays out a meticulously planned journey. It's broken down into five distinct phases, almost like chapters in a city's growth story. This structured pathway ensures a methodical approach to such a comprehensive undertaking.
Precisely. The development of both the Unified Development Code and the engineering design criteria will occur in these five phases. First, a code diagnostic and analysis report. Second, the draft UDC itself. Third, UDC refinement and adoption. Fourth, the engineering design criteria. And finally, a phase for optional services.
Okay, let's start with phase one. The code diagnostic and analysis report. Its goal sounds like laying the foundation, building consensus by identifying issues with everyone who uses the code, stakeholders, getting that initial buy-in.
Absolutely, that's exactly it. This phase involves broad community engagement. F&I will set up a project website for information and draft content review and to facilitate public comments. That's pretty standard these days.
Mm-hmm.
They'll also conduct virtual stakeholder interviews over 2 days with a really wide cross-section of the community. We're talking city commissioners, planning staff, emergency services, local business groups like home builders and realtors, even the banking community.
So really covering all the bases.
Trying to, yeah. And there's also a community open house planned, both in person and virtually, to capture broader public input. A critical outcome from this phase is determining whether a traditional form-based or hybrid zoning approach is most appropriate.
Okay, explain that difference a bit. Traditional versus form-based.
Sure. So traditional zoning typically separates land, uses rigidly residential here, commercial there, industrial over there. Form-based zoning, on the other hand, focuses more on the physical form, the look and feel of buildings, and the streetscape, regardless of the specific use inside. It often aims for a more predictable, perhaps aesthetically pleasing built environment.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they need to figure out which approach, or maybe a combination, a hybrid, best suits Shawnee's future vision from their comprehensive plan, while also being, you know, practical for both developers applying the rules and the city staff administering them.
Right. Balancing vision with usability.
Exactly. The key deliverable for this phase is that code diagnostic and analysis report, all provided digitally.
And that diagnostic report then becomes the roadmap for phase two, the draft UDC. This is where they actually start writing the new rules.
That's right. The draft UDC aims to address several key elements identified in phase one, like including illustrations to make regulations clearer.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah, visual aids can make a big difference. Also, building in flexibility for higher quality, creative developments, and encouraging innovative subdivision and lot designs. It's also designed to streamline procedures, update terms and definitions, you know, get rid of outdated language and reorganize the regulations to improve readability and administration, make it user-friendly.
Makes sense.
And importantly, it will explicitly include housing types to support choice and affordability, review all the permitted and special uses, update parking requirements, modernize sign regulations, all of this, of course, while ensuring overall consistency with the comprehensive plan. That's the guiding star.
How does the review process work for this draft?
It's iterative. F&I prepares sections like general provisions, subdivision regulations, design standards, zoning parts 1 and 2, signs, and then city staff reviews them, usually for about 2 to 4 weeks per section.
Okay.
Then they meet, F&I and the city staff, to discuss feedback, hash things out, and refine it before moving to the next section.
Got it. So once they have that crucial draft hammered out, the next hurdle is getting it officially adopted by the city. That brings us to phase 3, refinement and formal adoption.
Right. The adoption process involves a joint workshop for both the Planning Commission and the City Commission. Get everyone in the same room for an overview and discussion.
Good idea. Avoid surprises later.
Hopefully. F&I will also participate in one Planning Commission public hearing and then one City Commission public hearing to provide support, answer questions, and help guide it through the official adoption process.
Okay. And phase 4, the engineering design criteria and standard specifications, that's happening alongside all this.
Yeah, concurrently, but it's a distinct track. In this phase, F&I reviews the existing documents the city already had, creates that technical memo we mentioned, drafts the new EDC, and develops any needed standard specifications based on current best practices.
So updating the technical backbone.
Exactly. Ensuring the underlying engineering standards are modern, safe, and effective. And finally, phase 5 covers optional services. This includes the potential creation of a development manual.
What's that?
It's basically a user guide for the new UDC. It would likely feature user-friendly flowcharts, application forms, step-by-step instructions. Really helps people navigate the new system once it's in place.
Ah, yeah. That sounds incredibly useful for practical implementation.
Definitely.
So we've talked about the vision, the detailed plan, but, you know, projects like this rarely go exactly as planned. What does this agreement say about timeline, budget, and when things might go off script?
That's where the additional services clauses become really important. They define what falls outside that initial lump sum fee.
Okay, like what?
For instance, if revisions are needed, but it wasn't F&I's fault, maybe the city changed its mind on something, or new information came to light. Or if the city requests more meetings or trips than were originally budgeted in the basic scope, those are billed hourly.
Makes sense.
Also, preparing grant applications or doing extra work for hearings or making revisions required because of new local, state, or federal regulations that pop up.
Right, things beyond their control.
Exactly. And if the city asks F&I to speed things up, requests an accelerated time schedule that might involve overtime, or if there are just excessive rounds of document revisions beyond what's reasonable, that's extra too.
Yeah.
It's all about outlining the parameters for unforeseen work.
And the timeline itself. How long do they have?
The time of completion is clearly defined. F&I has 24 months, 2 years from the project kickoff meeting to complete their basic services.
Okay.
But, and this is important, F&I is entitled to adjust the schedule and even their compensation for delays that are not their fault.
Such as?
Such as delays in the client, the city, providing reviews or necessary information, or delays in getting required governmental approvals. This highlights that responsibility isn't one-sided here.
Yeah, that leads right into the city's role. What does the city have to do?
Exactly. This raises that important question. What does the city, as the client, need to do to ensure the project stays on track? Their responsibilities of owner are spelled out, and these are absolutely critical for success. They have to provide meeting space and logistics, contact all the meeting invitees for those stakeholder and public meetings.
So admin stuff.
Some of it, yeah. But perhaps most crucially, they have to examine and provide prompt, consolidated, and clear feedback on all submittals from F&I and do it within a reasonable time frame.
That sounds critical, prompt and clear feedback.
It is. You know, this prompt feedback clause is often overlooked, but it's so critical. I've personally seen projects grind almost to a halt for weeks because client feedback wasn't timely or it wasn't consolidated, like different departments giving conflicting feedback or just wasn't clear. It can cause massive delays and frustration.
I can imagine.
The city also needs to designate a specific person in writing who has the authority to act on behalf of the city regarding the contract. And they need to arrange access to public and private property if F&I needs it to perform their services.
Okay, so clear responsibilities on both sides. Beyond the project management aspects, the terms and conditions of agreement section really gets into the legal nitty-gritty. This is the contractual DNA, right?
Absolutely. These clauses truly define the working relationship and, importantly, how risk is allocated between the city and F&I.
What are some key ones we should look at?
Well, under changes, any alterations to the scope must be by mutual written agreement with equitable adjustments to both cost and time. This prevents one side from just unilaterally changing the deal.
Standard, but important.
Very. Regarding termination, either party can terminate the agreement with 10 days written notice. But if that happens, F&I must be paid for all services they've already rendered and expenses they've incurred up to that date, plus any reasonable expenses directly caused by the termination itself.
So they don't get left completely high and dry if the project gets canceled midway.
Correct. They get paid for the work done. Now, the consequential damages clause is particularly important for understanding risk allocation. F&I is explicitly not liable for special, indirect, incidental, or consequential damages. Things like the city losing potential profits from a development that got delayed, or costs associated with equipment not operating because of a project issue.
Whoa, okay. That sounds significant.
It is. This isn't just legal boilerplate. It's a critical risk allocation. What it means for Shawnee, practically speaking, is that if a delay hypothetically caused by F&I indirectly leads to the city losing out on, say, a major economic development opportunity, F&I is specifically not financially responsible for those lost future profits.
So that risk stays with the city.
In that scenario, yes. It's a fundamental shifting of certain types of financial risk from the consultant back to the client, which is crucial for anyone managing these contracts to understand fully.
Definitely something to watch for. What else?
Then there's the information furnished by client clause. F&I isn't liable for problems that arise because they relied on inaccurate or incomplete information provided by the city. And the city actually agrees to indemnify F&I in those cases, meaning the city will protect F&I from financial harm or legal claims resulting from F&I's reliance on the city's own information.
But F&I has a responsibility, too.
Yes, there's a balance. F&I must disclose any defects or omissions in that client-furnished information that it reasonably discovers during its work. They can't just ignore obvious errors.
Okay. What about who owns the final documents?
Good question. Under ownership of documents, all the reports, plans, specs, everything developed by F&I becomes the property of the client, the city, once F&I has been paid in full.
Upon payment, got it.
But there's a catch for reuse. If the client or anyone else the city gives the documents to reuses those documents on other projects without F&I's specific written verification or adaptation for that new purpose, it's done at the client's sole risk.
Meaning the city indemnifies F&I again.
Exactly. The city agrees to protect F&I from any claims arising from that unverified reuse. F&I, however, can retain copies for their records and reuse generic components or knowledge gained on other projects, but that reuse is at F&I's own risk.
Interesting distinction. And finally, payment terms.
Pretty straightforward. Under payment, F&I can bill monthly for the work done, progress payments. Payment is due within 30 days of the city receiving F&I's statement.
And if the city is late?
If it's late, payments start accruing interest at 1% per month, calculated from the 30th day after the statement date. And significantly, F&I can actually suspend their services if they haven't been paid after giving the city 7 days written notice.
So there are teeth in that payment clause.
Yes.
Yeah.
These clauses really form the backbone of financial accountability for both parties.
And shifting back to costs for a second, beyond that initial lump sum, what's striking is the incredible granularity in the schedule of charges for any additional services. It really details how unexpected costs would be handled.
Exactly. And this isn't about, you know, nickel and diming. It's designed to bring transparency and predictability to costs that fall outside the original scope.
How detailed does it get?
Very. We're talking pre-agreed hourly rates specified for different levels of professionals. For example, a professional one has a rate range of $71 to $131 per hour, while a more senior professional six is between $174 and $353 per hour. There are rates for CAD techs, admin support, interns.
Right.
It even breaks down specific rights for specialized equipment usage, like if they need survey-grade GPS, that's $150 per day. A drone is $200 per day. Water quality meter, $100 a day.
Okay, so very specific.
Yes. Mileage is reimbursed at standard IRS rates. Printing has per-page costs, like 10 cents for a small black and white copy, 25 cents for color. And then other direct expenses, things like outside printing services, necessary travel, subsistence, communication costs, those are reimbursed at the actual cost times a multiplier of 1.15.
A multiplier? Why is that?
It's common in consulting agreements. It covers the firm's overhead and administrative costs associated with handling and processing those pass-through expenses. It's usually between 1.1 and 1.2. Similarly, special services like, say, outside laboratory analysis are billed at cost times 1.10. And if F&I uses non-F&I employees, like maybe a resident representative for construction oversight, and F&I provides them workspace, that's billed at cost times 2.0.
So that level of detail really helps the city budget and avoid just open-ended billing for unforeseen work, which must be a major concern in large, complex projects like this.
Absolutely. It ensures everyone knows the cost structure upfront for anything that might come up beyond the basic scope. It manages expectations.
And there you have it. From a comprehensive plan vision to a detailed lump sum agreement, a structured five-phase project, we've really seen how a single professional services agreement provides the roadmap for potentially an entire city's development future. It encompasses the legal framework, the financial terms, and those crucial community engagement aspects. It truly lays out the whole operational strategy.
Yeah, this deep dive really underscores some core insights, I think. First, the absolute importance of a meticulously detailed scope of work for clarity and avoiding disputes down the line. Second, the critical role, maybe sometimes underestimated role, of the client's responsibilities, especially timely feedback, in ensuring project success. It's a partnership.
Definitely.
And third, those often overlooked practicalities buried in the terms and conditions like payment terms, liability clauses, document ownership, they truly define the entire relationship between a city and its consultants. These agreements, when done well, are living documents designed to anticipate and manage the inherent complexity of shaping a city's future from day one.
A fascinating look under the hood of city planning and development.
Which brings us to a final thought, maybe something for you, our listeners, to consider. This raises an important question. When you encounter any detailed plan or contract, maybe at work, maybe even a personal agreement, what are the two or three crucial clauses you should always scrutinize to really understand the underlying power dynamics and the potential pitfalls? Think about how these principles we discussed today, scope, responsibility, risk, payment, might apply to your own dealings with services, projects, or agreements. Where does the real leverage lie?